thank you, Blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, October 16th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Dumiake Mokalielie.
Here are our top stories this evening.
President Mugabe's nephew and Indigenization Minister Patrick Joao says Zimbabwe is not going back on its Black Economic Empowerment Program. He said Mr. Mugabe is the only qualified person to address Zimbabwe's economic crisis.
He has a master's degree in economics from the London School of Economics. So don't think you can lecture us about economics. We understand it.
Zimbabwe joins the world in marking World Food Day today, with the food situation getting dire for most families.
We don't have food for three meals. Nowadays things are very hard for us. Even our children, they will starve from morning, afternoon, evening.
And Studio 7's Blessing Zulu seeks solutions from political party leaders on how to address the country's debilitating economic crisis.
These and much more coming up. Stay tuned. President Mugabe has an economics degree from the London School of Economics, and therefore no one can lecture him on how to run Zimbabwe's economy. That from his nephew and Indigenization Minister Patrick Joao today, even as Zimbabwe is battling rapid economic decline and high levels of unemployment. Joao was addressing a Black Empowerment Indaba at the Harare International Conference Center. He cautioned opponents and critics of indigenization and vowed to press ahead with the controversial program.
My boss, the President of the Republic of Zimbabwe, head of state and head of government, commander in chief of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces. He has a master's degree in economics from the London School of Economics. So don't think you can lecture us about economics. We understand it. And we understand economics from a real, practical perspective, not bookish economics, ceteris paribus, all things equal. No, please. So please don't give us some of those arguments which are vacuous.
Minister Joao cited the tobacco and the AIDS levies to justify the indigenization tariff that he has proposed on companies.
They might be those that have not read the Indigenization Act. I urge you to read it, because I have read it. And when I talk, I am clear about what I am saying. And when I talk, I am actually in the process of setting a trap for you to expose yourself and for you to expose your ignorance. And when I talked about the levy, I was very, very clear about what I was talking about. Just to let you know, we have a vibrant tobacco sector. The reason we have a vibrant tobacco sector is because we instituted a tobacco levy. We are one of the world leaders in the management of HIV and AIDS. The reason we've done so well in the management of HIV and AIDS is because we instituted an AIDS levy. Don't go behind and try and influence my colleagues and try and influence members of my family. I know exactly where I am going. And I know exactly where you stand. And I'm out there to flush you out, because you are a threat to the empowerment of my people.
That was Indigenization Minister Patrick Joao at an empowerment conference in Harare today. For perspective, VOA reporter Ntungamile Nkomo reached economic analyst Prosper Chitambara.
First and foremost, I have no problem with the idea or the ideas of indigenization, but I think the manner in which we do our indigenization, I think it should be inclusive, should be participatory, and it should also be flexible enough to consider different sectors not prescriptive in the sense that it's perceived to then put a higher investment premium or investment country risk factor by investors who may want to do business in Zimbabwe. So I think it's something that needs to be done sensibly, taking into account the views of potential investors, the views of government, obviously, and also the views of local businesses, so that we come up with a position that is mutually beneficial, a position that is developmental, and a position that is acceptable to everyone. I don't believe in a hand-line stance.
Mr. Joao says that after all, Mr. Mugabe has a degree in economics from the United Kingdom. Therefore, no one can really tell him anything about the economy. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree with those sentiments. Number one, possessing a degree in economics does not mean that you have monopoly over economic knowledge. I think once you attain these qualifications, one thing that I have noticed is that you become more humble, because as you attain higher qualifications, the degree of peer review is very, very high and is very thorough. So it tends to humble you. So you can't say just because I am a PhD in economics, then I know everything about economics. I think our government needs to consult us.
That was economic analyst Prosper Chitambara on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare. Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko and local government minister Sevia Kasukwere also addressed the conference and rallied behind Joao. Meanwhile, ZANU-PF's 15th National Annual People's Conference will be held in Victoria Falls between December 7 and December 13.
Zimbabwe today joined the rest of the world in marking World Food Day, with food shortages looming ahead of a new cropping season, with the United States dollar becoming more elusive for most struggling families. Our reporter Arthur Chigoriwa has more from the provincial capital.
Most people who spoke with Studio 7 say the food situation is getting dire, with most families now resorting to one meal a day to survive as compared to last year. Emilda Chapeta, a mother of four, says she doesn't know what to do or who to turn to as she struggles daily to feed their family.
Things are very hard nowadays. We don't have food for three meals. Nowadays things are very hard for us. Even our children, they will starve from morning, afternoon, evening. Otherwise they will get one meal for them to survive. So rather than years back here, things were better than now.
Emola village from Siakobu along Zambezi River, Milton Masaba, says there's no food in the area because of inadequate rainfall during the last rainy season. Masaba said most villagers are now surviving on food for work programs being administered by United Methodist Church. Chikono Hona high density resident Tinashe Mapranga says the food and the money crisis there for everyone to see, with most families now buying very small packets of rations known as sauna or accident to survive, as they can no longer afford buying food in bulk.
Around town you see some of them buying small millimeal, maybe 1 kg, small cooking oil, maybe 500 mils, just only for today and tomorrow. So you see what the people are struggling to survive for food.
Zimbabwe Human Rights Organization Zimrise chairperson Pasimo Nyagureba says his organization is concerned by the partisan distribution of food by the ruling party ZANU-PF. He said this system is disadvantaging many needy families who have no political affiliation cards.
The sad situation, or the sad thing, is whenever we get this food from donors or people who come with that kind of food, it has always ended up in the hands of political parties and partisan institutions. Like, you find the offices of the district administrators, the offices of councillors, taking over the distribution of foods in rural areas and doing that on a partisan basis, on party lines, so that those who support a certain political party will be the ones to benefit, and the people who are deemed to be opposite to the prevailing political situation in the rural areas, mainly where the ruling party has got control, are suffering and at the receiving end of failing to get food.
Nyakureba says the problem of food shortage in the country is not a result of drought, but the poor planning by the government. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, says about 2.17 million Zimbabweans need food aid from now until end of March 2016 due to poor harvest last season. The government has promised that it will do all it can to buy food so no one dies from hunger, but activists say they are worried by reports some of the food aid is being politicized. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Ata Chukoriwa.
Still with the food, let us hear the views of American government on the subject.
October 16th is World Food Day, a day of action against hunger. The date commemorates the founding in 1945 of the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, or FAO. On this day, people around the world come together to declare their commitment to eradicate hunger in our lifetime. Over the past decade or so, we have seen a great reduction of people living with hunger on a nearly daily basis. Back then, about 1 in 6 people went to bed hungry most nights. Now it's about 1 in every 9. Nonetheless, that still leaves some 795,000 chronically hungry people around the world. Of these, 60% are women, and this despite the fact that most small farmers living in the developing world are women. And when women go hungry, so all too often do children. About 161 million kids under the age of 5 are malnourished. This means that their brains won't develop normally, they may have difficulties learning, and their physical and cognitive growth is stunted. Lack of nutrition compromises not only their own success in the future, but also the development of the communities, economies, and countries in which they live. In addition to those children who are chronically undernourished, almost 5 million children under the age of 5 die of malnutrition-related causes every year. The global community is working to eradicate hunger because it is the right thing to do. The first of the United Nations Millennium Development Goals called for halving the proportion of people suffering from hunger and facing extreme poverty. We have achieved that goal. As we transition to a sustainable development agenda for 2030, we have raised our ambitions and are striving to effectively end hunger and extreme poverty altogether. The United States aids this effort through its innovative Feed the Future initiative. We partner with country governments, many universities, multilateral and non-governmental organizations, transnational organizations like the UN, research communities, and the private sector to lift millions of vulnerable people out of hunger and poverty. On World Food Day, the United States reaffirms its commitment to the fight against poverty, hunger, and undernutrition.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In our second and final part of our interview with Malawian President Peter Wamutharika, he says he is confident that Africa will be able to fulfill the new sustainable development goals that were set at the recent 70th United Nations General Assembly in New York. First, however, he talks with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about the reforms at the United Nations Security Council.
I think this is pretty much universal. The thing that, look, the structure, 1945, when you had the 5 permanent members, those are the countries that won the war, you know, against the Germany and Italy. So they decided to form this group, the 4 of them, United States, Britain, France, China and Russia, the 5 permanent members who also have a veto in a decision they have to approve. So people feel that after 70 years, the world has changed. As I said in my speech there, that I think the Security Council is no longer representative and it's not democratic and it's not accountable. If you look at those countries, 80% of the members of the Security Council are representing Europeans, except China. There's no representation for Africa or for the rest of Asia. So there's a feeling that the thing needs to be changed. It's about time.
But are you happy with the pace of reform there, or it's too slow?
It's very slow. The reform process has been going on for the last 40 years. Nothing is happening because for reform to take place, in the end, the five members with a veto have to agree. Any one of those can veto any decision, and that will be the end of the process.
Let's talk about the Sustainable Development Goals, 17 of them now, but they were the 8 Millennium Development Goals that many countries did not meet. Are you confident that Africa will be able to meet some of those Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs?
Yes, I am. Malawi made half of them, and we did much better than other countries. I think we will, but as I said earlier in one of the sessions at the UN, I think the problem with the MDGs, that they were based on an assumption which probably was not realistic. I think we forgot the supply side of this. For example, we talked about university primary education, but didn't think about how we're going to have school buildings, teachers, teaching materials, learning materials. So we end up having all these kids registered, but there's no school building or school block. The same with health, for example. We talked about all this, but forgot that we need hospitals, we need doctors, we need nurses, we need equipment, we need drugs, medicine. So that was ignored, and I'm hoping that with the SDGs, it'll be a different approach, especially in terms of resources and how the resources will be mobilized. Yeah.
That was Malawian President Peter Omtharika speaking with Blessing Zulu in New York.
Take a look now at regional and international news.
At least three women suicide bombers blew themselves up on the outskirts of Maiduguri, Nigeria, killing at least four people and themselves.
Bulgarian President Rosen Plevneliev says he deeply regrets the fatal shooting of an Afghan refugee by Bulgarian border police and says the event shows the need for rapid action by the European Union to ease the refugee crisis.
And U.S. President Barack Obama begins a four-day visit to the West Coast today by meeting with the families of victims of last week's mass shootings in Rosebud, Oregon.
Another controversy over the killing of big game for trophy in Zimbabwe has erupted following the killing of a nameless elephant of enormous size and big tusks. International media reports say the elephant was taken down by a German hunter who paid $60,000 on October 8th. Although the hunt was legal, it is the sheer size and advanced age of the jumbo that some people treasured and are furious about. This comes in the wake of Cecil the Lion that was killed by an American hunter a few months ago.
That Zimbabwe needs drastic measures to rectify the economy, which has debilitated so many sectors and affected so many lives, is not in dispute even among the country's ruling and opposition figures. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu sought solutions from various parties.
The serious infighting in ZANU-PF is raising serious questions about the party's priorities in as far as addressing some of the nation's critical issues such as the economy. As a result, there has been a deluge of party manifestos and economic blueprints from the country's various political parties countering ZANU-PF's ZIM asset, which they say will not solve the country's problems. All fingers are pointing to ZANU-PF's mismanagement of the economy. Elton Mangoma, who leads the Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe, says his party could set the country in the direction it needs.
Mangoma's presidency would make sure that the corruption that is there is stopped.
Many place ZANU-PF's indigenization policy at the heart of the cause of the collapse of the economy and social fabric, as Marcelina Chikasha, leader of the African Democratic Party, explains.
We're also looking at a situation where we have uncertainty in areas of policy. You know, we talk about indigenization, there's no clarity, there's no fairness.
Former finance minister and leader of Mavambo Kusile Don, Simba Makoni, agrees.
What's wrong with our economy is the management.
Former prime minister and founding leader of the Movement for Democratic Change, Morgan Tsvangirai, describes the situation as dire and in need of external and internal assistance.
President Mugabe has presided over this economic decline over the last 35 years.
As for Egypt, Zenemu Nendza, leader of the African National Party, there is no economy to even talk about.
The economy is more than the way it works.
ZANU-PF, however, contends its policies are effective and that it has not lost sight of the needs of the people or the importance of addressing the economic crisis. Of criticism by opposition groups, ruling party spokesperson Simon Kayamoyo says they should offer solutions to economic recovery rather than criticism. While all opposition groups agree that there is a problem and that ZANU-PF is largely to blame, some like Tendai Biti of the newly formed People's Democratic Party or PDP and says the opposition groups are also to blame for not forming a united front.
It looks like we are getting more and more divided, which is why in the past personally I've actually apologized for the collective stupidity.
Spokesman of a group fronted by former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, going by the name People First, Rugare Gumbo, concurs, saying there is need for unity of purpose and his group is engaging other opposition players. But Professor Love Momaduku of the National Constitutional Assembly, or NCA, says he will not be part of any coalition and says the country basically needs a fresh start with new leaders. These are just some of the positions of the country's political parties. Next week, we'll bring you one-on-one interviews with all of them starting on Monday. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
Seven would like to thank you, our listeners, for your outstanding response to our request, for your telephone calls and text messages during yesterday's International Day for the Rural Woman. A big thank you to you all who participated. At the same time, we do apologize for poor lines that made it impossible for some of you to get on our air, and to those who did not make it at all.
Here are some of the remaining messages from yesterday.
We also received some wonderful messages from rural women in Zimbabwe. One comes from SCC in Gurue, and she says, rural women are suffering. There's no source of income. We work day and night in gardens, but people don't have the much-needed U.S. dollar to buy our produce. The economic hardship is just killing us. Grace says, hi, I live in Hurungwe at Kanesia. Life is very difficult here due to lack of water source for farming projects. Us women here end up venturing into gold panning, which is leading to prostitution. Thank you so much to SCC in Gurue and also Grace M in Hurungwe. We appreciate your messages.
A big thank you to all of you once again. Keep on keeping on. In our sports segment, Zimbabwe's Might Warriors are staring history in the face when they enter the pitch of Rufaro Stadium on Sunday. Reporter Michael Cariati gives us the story.
Zimbabwe football fans are looking forward to nothing short of victory when the Might Warriors trot onto Rufaro Stadium Sunday for what is probably their biggest assignment since 1980, when Zimbabwe was admitted to international sport. The Might Warriors, first indomitable Lioness of Cameroon, in the 2016 Olympic Games qualifier that will decide whether or not the Zimbabweans qualify for the finals in Rio de Janeiro come the year 2016. Should they qualify, the Mighty Warriors will become only the second team since the Golden Hockey Girls of 1980 to participate in the global sporting gathering. In fact, the Mighty Warriors will become the only team to qualify for the Olympic Games, and the hockey side did not take part in the qualifiers but went to Moscow by invitation after some countries boycotted the game. Having lost the first leg 2-1 near Ounde, the Mighty Warriors only need the 1-0 win to qualify for the sporting extravaganza on the away goals rule. A member of the Warriors fan club, Zana Imroyua, says he cannot wait for Sunday for him to celebrate a historic occasion. Mighty Warriors followers, Ponyangoro, says there is nothing that will stop the Zimbabwean team from winning qualifying for the Global Sporting Festival.
We are going to Rio. Nothing is going to stop us. We will qualify.
The honor to do the job, however, is in the hands of Shadrach Mlauzi and his girls. Mlauzi has built a team of youth and experience, and having learned the lessons of that narrow defeat in Yaounde, says he has adopted new tactics.
Last
time round, we're more happy by retreating into our defensive structure. But this time round, we are chasing a result. It is important that we start really putting the opposition under pressure high up the field as well.
Dudone Chamba and Rutendo Machimura will lead Mulao's defensive goals, but the coach is also aware of not leaving it rigged open for the Lionesses to capitalize. He says he has also been working on his defense after they let him two silly goals away from home when they had taken an early lead.
Mostly again on improving even our defensive behavior, because we conceded rather cheap goals, which came as a result of lapses in concentration.
The Zimbabwe Football Association has seen the importance of a soft fund and are charging a modest $1 at Tatse Fuhaus Ruparo Stadium. The wings are going for $3, while the VIP stand is going for only $5. With such a modest gift charge, Ruparo Stadium should be full to the brim as the nation rallies behind the mighty Warriors. At the same time, the Warriors are also a barbecue stadium as for the less important African Nation Championship qualifier against the Crocodiles of Lesotho. Coach Kaliso Pasua has sexy, unlike the referee and justice Dandano of Cape United, as well as Ronald Steele Dynamos from Kent for indiscipline. Having been knocked out of the 2018 World Cup qualifiers by the Comoros, which Zimbabwe knocked out in the Chan tournament, not much resistance is expected from the Crocodiles. Zimbabwe are bidding to qualify for the African Nations Championship for the fourth time in a row, having made the journey in 2009, 2012, and 2014. The focus of attention, however, is on the Mighty Warriors. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Carrier.
African artist called Zahara, coming to you from Studio 7 right here in Washington, D.C.
Now to recap today's top stories. President Mugabe's nephew and Indigenization Minister Patrick Joao says Zimbabwe is not going back on its black economic empowerment program, which many blame for scaring away prospective investors.
And today, Zimbabwe joined the world in marking World Food Day, with the food situation getting dire for most families.
That's our broadcast this evening. Join us at 7 every evening for news in three languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com for more on our top stories. And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And this is Dimiake Mokalielia here in Washington, wishing you a very pleasant and wonderful weekend. And remember to also tune in to Live Talk coming in right after Ndebele.